Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome back, Star Wars fans. We are here with what may possibly be the best Star Wars of all time, in my opinion. We've got the third arc, chapter 3 of Andor season 2. And once again, same crew as last week. We've got Daddy Sheev, John Bates, and I also got Lord Dagovir. We're back again. We're back again, and let's honestly just get right into it because we were talking while the camera was.
We got a lot of shit to talk about today.
There's a lot to break down.
We decided maybe we should start recording and letting you guys hear. So this is this was peak. This was peak Star Wars for me. But we can kind of just start with kind of where we leave the characters. Obviously, it's a year after the last arc. And basically we see that Gorman has tightened up. They are cracking down on curfews. And they're just, the construction's almost complete with what they're doing there. So let's just kind of talk about that to begin with. Let's talk about Gorman. And if you guys want to add just kind of anything else with that, what did we think of where we start this arc?
I mean, where we start this arc, we can just see in a year's time, like what the, you know, Empire has been doing to the planet and what I guess so-called the actions of the Gorman front have caused there. It all looks like a police state. It's such a contrast from the last arc of how there were people in the square. It was a little more lively. Yeah, there were little protests. But now this episode, we open up and there's just Imperials everywhere, barricades. It looks desolate. There's no tourism this time, and you can really see like the Empire kind of like squeeze in and grip down on these people, and then you'll see later in the episode, you know, episodes what happens. But right off the bat, we can really see what the Empire's like really been doing on Gorman to the people. What did you guys think?
Man, it's just intense. Yeah. Like that's all right. So you guys know me. I'm more of the, I don't want to say negative, but I'm just more of the critical one, I feel like, in this group at times. But this is what I thought season 2 was going to start off, was just like, all right, here you go. You know about Gorman. You know what's going on here. Bam, 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 straight to the chaos. You know, because honestly, if you really think about it, you don't need to watch the first 3 episodes of this season to understand what's happening right now outside of Director Krennic letting everybody know that they need to go to Gorman. That scene is maybe like 6 or 7 minutes in total with the entire span. But Jesus, man, when Andor is on its like full momentum with this slow burn, I don't know if there is a better show that has such incredible arcs from episode to episode. And it was just episode 7, guys. It was just episode 7 out of the 3 that we got, dude. It was so good, and terrified for everything that we're going to have to talk about again. And yeah. Resurface again.
No, I agree. I think the word that, like, the thing that came to mind for me is just like how these episodes make me feel. It's less about like what happened. There's obviously a ton that happened in these episodes, but like the feeling that I got was like almost reminiscent to how I was feeling during like a Breaking Bad. Like that level. That's like kind of what I was thinking. I was like, oh my God, like I'm so tense. Like I'm invested in these characters. And I think that's something that is like important with Dagobert, I know you said the episode, like basically like plot wise, you don't really need to know, but character wise, I think is where those other episodes shine through. So that is something like, you know, these characters, we care for these characters. It's like something is going to happen and we all know it. We just don't know what it is. And that they carried the tension throughout this entire episode specifically, because I thought something was going to happen and nothing really happened. We were just seeing things that were escalating towards that climactic point. But yeah, let's like, I kind of want to switch to where we see Cassian now, like the rebellion. It's a year later. And this is a point for me that I think is where this show kind of falls flat. But like what we talked about in earlier episodes, where we'll see a skip and we have to kind of put the pieces together. Yeah. I would love to see like Yavin and everything kind of grow, but now we just have to hit this checkpoint and see, hey, like this is where we're at now, and we can fill that in as viewers. That's fine, because we can do that. But I would love to see that. But let's talk about Yavin and like that whole rebel base. Like, what are we thinking with that, Dagobert? I see you. What do you think?
No, let your boy Bates go first. Let the daddy sheep go first.
Sure. I mean, we can go into it. So what you're just saying, like, what do we think of like, what, like where they are now with Yavin? I mean,
yeah, we see Cassian there.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say we see Cassian like with Bix living there is where we leave off.
Yeah. Yeah. We kind of, you know, this is the first time we've seen Yavin like fully into a base in this series, right? Or am I forgetting what was in the last
arc? Yeah. Full fledged.
Yeah, full fledged. And yeah, I mean, you can kind of see now the rebellion going, they're getting, you know, closer and closer. I mean, we're 2 years out from the battle of Yavin. And yeah, we get little hints here of, you know, from the dialogue that, you know, Cassian has more of a bigger role in the rebellion. It seems he's going to briefings and it seems like he's referred to as a captain, and, you know, he's living in this little, you know, shack with Bix. And it seems like they're trying to, you know, put like the, you know, other stuff behind them, have more stuff with the rebellion. And then what did you guys think of the force healer part? I want to get into that.
I love that. I don't know. Yeah, if you guys,
I
want to like
hear
that,
you guys. I
absolutely.
I know I'm jumping a little bit.
No, let's jump. Let's jump.
That was like in the beginning, like when we see Cassian on Andor, or not on Andor, on Yavin, we see him, you know, he has that like blaster wound, and he's like skeptical about this force lady. Like, what did you guys think of that?
Yeah, it's so we're watching the episodes. Connor messages us in the Discord and it was like, hey, Dagobert, I'm at this one part that I think you're really going to like. And I was like, oh, and you can't tell me that because I'm thinking Exar Kun is about to walk
in between everybody.
I get super excited. But I will say this. You guys know my critiques about the Force and lightsabers and yada, yada, yada. But, man, I don't think I have seen a Star Wars moment that felt as mystical as this part. And when you watch A New Hope for the first time, I feel like a lot of people, especially people that watch it in the theater for the first time, they don't know really like how the Force works, but they know it exists. And they understand that it's there because Darth Vader uses it, Obi-Wan uses it, and then Luke at the end of the movie uses it. This was so beautifully done. Rogue One gives us the character Chura Inua, you know, who is force sensitive on a spiritual level, but he cannot lift rocks. Maz Kanata, another character who is spiritual, but isn't a force user at all. But then there's a character like Han Solo, where a lot of old heads used to debate whether or not he was force sensitive because he's so lucky and he's such a great pilot. You know, yes, I think to a degree, Han Solo can be force sensitive because everybody's connected to the force to some degree, right? Cassian, in my opinion, is also someone like that, where he is force sensitive because he is surviving to the point, yes, he is a messenger. He's going to steal the Death Star plans with Jyn Erso. And that lady, who's not even a Jedi, by the way,
no.
She doesn't even understand how any of this works. And she's like, dude, I don't know. I just knew you were there and you're carrying so much and you have a purpose. I was like, damn, bro, this is so good. Yep. This is exactly like, bro, I have not been this hyped since I saw Baby Yoda lift the damn Mudhorn. Like, I was just like, and even Mando in that episode is like, dude, I don't know what happened. Like, I just witnessed it. And Queel is trying to tell him, can you explain this shit to me again? You know? And bro, that's exactly how the Force needs to be in Star Wars. It's so visual these days. You know, it's so explicit, just right there in your face. You know what can be done. But this was so beautiful, bro. Like, oh, man. Oh, that was peak, bro.
I completely agree. And that's, like, based off of your point, like, it's not something that we've seen before. I personally love learning more about, like, non-affiliated Force users, like people that just kind of stumble upon, because it's said that, like, if, like, for example, Grogu, when he is learning, like when he takes him, he's taken this, I forget who's, is he taken to Ahsoka? It's Ahsoka, right? Where she's just like talking to him. It's like his powers will fade if he doesn't get this. It's Ahsoka.
Eventually, yes.
His powers will fade. But like people are force sensitive to a certain point. And like if you don't train like a Jedi, you'll lose that stuff. But you don't lose everything. Yeah. Like there's something to it. Like obviously she was force sensitive. And she's almost like a fortune teller almost.
Yeah.
She's treated like this mystic being.
Yeah.
So it's
and she's
it's
not
so
even a
cool.
Jedi.
Yeah, yeah, and she's
that's what's so cool.
Yeah, and she is like talking to Cassian and Bix, and she's like telling them like, oh, like I don't even know if they believe it sometimes. Like sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but like you've got something. And she says that Cassian is a messenger, which I think was perfectly put.
Yes.
Perfectly put. He delivers a message to the rebellion with the Death Star plans, and she mentions that he has somewhere to be. We obviously know that that is with the rebellion. It is saving people. Like it's, I think that that was perfectly put, and it was the little smidge of the Force that we needed to remind us that this is Star Wars.
Yes.
And I think that was perfect.
Yeah, it was a
good man. It gave me so much chills because it reminds me of church. Anyway, I'm on with the Force. The Force with me, and especially his final scene. Like he's got Death Troopers shooting at him, bro. They're missing. They're looking like Stormtroopers.
Yep.
You know, but it's just one of those things where I'm a big Knights of the Old Republic fan, especially Knights of the Old Republic 2 with Treya, and she's always talking about how I hate the Force because we basically have no free will. It's determining this fake balance for all of us. So when you see that in perspective, and I don't know, man, that was just so mind-blowing. And yeah, bro, Cassian is this person. He kind of has this Star Wars universe plot armor,
He's a chosen one.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yes, exactly, dude. Yes.
He's not the chosen one. He is a chosen one.
But he is a chosen one.
There are chosen
people. That's what I'm talking about, bro. Yeah.
Yes. That is, it was chef's kiss. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. I wish there was more stuff like that in this show, man. I if there was, because they are all so good, bro. Like this show is so close, baby. It is so to me. It's so close to what everybody is saying it is. But if it had more of that,
man. And he's scared of the Force. He's like scared of this thing. Like he's uncomfortable. He doesn't want to believe it. I don't think he wants to believe
Han Solo it. Vibes.
Exactly.
Yes, yes,
the parallel, the parallel between that is so Han Solo the same way. I really like that scene too. And I love just the subtlety of like knowing that, he's chosen by the Force and, we know how his story ends. And that also makes it kind of tragic because like we know what's going to happen to him. Yeah. And we know, the Force has its way with him. So. Yeah, I thought that was really cool. And then I guess the next thing after that is, Cassian Wilbon. Yeah, Wilbon returns and, recruits Cass to go on one last hoorah for Luthen, it sounds like.
Yeah, we've got
returning to Gorman.
I think that scene with Wilbon was great. I think that him like locking in with Cassian and being like, listen, like we need this. You need this. Like it's not revenge. Like it's good for the rebellion, but it's also like, hey, we need
personal payback.
It's personal. Yeah. And I love when I love Gorman, honestly, as a planet. So going back there was
planet too. It's tragic.
I really liked it.
Happens to it. Yeah. I love it so much. And seeing it, when they come back, just how much it's like we talked earlier here, just how much it's changed, just from the Empire, squeezing and gripping it, choking the life out of it, literally, because, what they're really after. They want that. They want that shiny rock. I guess shiny rock on the earth. Oh goodness. But yeah, I guess the next thing, is, you know, after, you know, they return to Gorman. I mean, then we kind of get the lead up here. Do we want to go into the Gorman massacre? Want to go into that?
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about, yeah, let's start with, like, basically, I guess we're moving towards episode two now, or the second episode of that. But I mean, basically, we see, like, the tension that is rising throughout this. And the episodes are kind of blending together for me. So I'm just going to talk about the story.
That's why I was jumping ahead.
Yeah, it does. But that's why I think it's so well. It just meshes together so well. Even Luthen's part, which I thought it was interesting as well, because, like, Luthen is, like, a part of the Rebellion, but, like, the Rebellion is not like, you know, Cassian, you got to really devote yourself to us now. Like, we have the military. Like, Luthen's kind of, like, he helped us, but, yeah, we're doing this now. Yeah, which I thought was, like, really interesting. Like, bro, Luthen, like, kind of started this, and now this is all going on now. Now we somebody's now, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, that was really interesting, too. And, now we have the parallel of Cassian going back to Gorman when he said they were not ready and telling them, like, no, y'all ain't ready for this shit. You know, now he's got to go and save them. Good luck.
Yeah, and we see they all start to basically go to the center of Gorman. Yes. And
Alma, I think, right? The city,
Yes, and they're having this peaceful protest, right? That is the main idea. They're opening it up. They're opening up.
Yeah.
And
that's the interesting thing. They kind of, the Empire, like, opens up the barriers. Like, they're inviting this. They want this to happen, you know. You know, the Empire, you know, wants, you know, what they want from Gorman. They want to frame this a certain way. So they're inviting these protesters, you know, to the center, you know, hoping something happens, you know, the whole we see later. But I thought that was really interesting. So, yeah, they're all, you know, going to the city center. And then what'd you guys think of Cyril at this part? You know, that his interaction he has with Enza a little bit before. And then what was it, like, the old guy's name, like the main like voice of Gorman, that older guy. And it's really interesting. Cyril in this episode, dude, is so, like, I think he was my favorite character in this episode. Like, his whole, like, realization that, like, what he's been doing is a lie, and what he's been doing for the Empire is a lie, and, like, he's literally set up these people to, like, get slaughtered, and his whole world, like, crashed out. He has, like, a crazy crash out, which I thought was insane. What'd you guys think of that?
I mean, we kind of talked about it. We knew that he was going to have some awakening, some realization. Yeah. This was more tragic than I thought it was going to be. I really did think that his character was set down this path, but I really felt sorry for him. Because, again, I love Star Wars when it's tragic. And, you know, Revenge of the Sith is my favorite movie, baby. It's all about tragedy, you know? So watching Cyril, like, not just what he did and what he was realizing. And it's really frustrating because we only get one final season, and it's a whole year after what happened. Like, he's still talking to the Gore front, and something happened where they realized, like, this guy is selling us out or some shit. You know, he's still talking to them on this weird basis, and everything else is going on. But I think what's most sad is seeing, like, him and Dedra interact. And Dedra's been hiding the secret. She's known the entire time. And Cyril is starting to realize, like, dude, like, even the person that I love, like, isn't telling me this shit. And yeah, it's just absolutely terrible. Like, because I want to talk about more of, like, what happens with Cassian and everything, but that relationship between Dedra and Cyril, I think, is just so sad. Because it's not like she doesn't care either, bro. You know, like, that whole scene at the end, like, she's mourning because of Cyril. You know, and her weird way of, like, mourning him and everything. And that's also, like, this is, like, these people need therapy, bro. Like, y'all need to go to counseling, like, for couples. And maybe y'all wouldn't have been in a situation, but it's just sad, bro. And when they have that altercation, you know, I gasped, you know, I was like, oh, shit. Like, I was like, damn, you know, that's how much has been going on with Cyril and everything else. And that was so well done, man. Yeah. Like, over th- This is two seasons. This show is only two seasons. And it had that much emotion and that much power for that character. You know, when all these other characters are getting four or five seasons, six seasons, you know, Game of Thrones seasons, you know. Yeah, that was very impressive to execute. And very sad. Very sad.
I think the biggest thing that we forget as the audience is like, it's only been like 3 weeks that we've had with this like season two cast, but like in universe, like these people have had relationships with all of these people for 3 years.
Yeah.
Like the relationship between Dedra and Cyril has been like if you think like 3 years, that's a long time that you have to trust somebody. You have to spend time with them. You have to, and Dedra has to lie to him.
Out of his face,
and she does because I think she is ultimately loyal to the Empire and her ambitions, but she very well could have told him, but that also could have derailed the entire plan, because
derailed the entire plan.
Like we spoke about before, like Cyril is not like evil. He believes in what he's doing, and he believes in like the order of the Empire and the idea that the Empire is supposed to uphold, but he doesn't realize
authority can do no wrong. And then he sees they definitely can. He's coming to see that a little too late.
He doesn't realize what he is, which cog he is in this machine. Yeah. So him coming to that realization and then him stepping up to like fight for himself, basically to own, like to be able to stand up for himself, I think was a really cool character moment on that. Right. And it was so complex because we know he's part of this terrible organization that are literally committing genocide. Like it is so tough to have sympathy for a character in that situation, just on like a meta level, but in like boots on the ground, we feel for him because we know that he's not all bad and that he thinks he's doing the right thing, because we've all been in a situation where we think we're doing something right and it ends up not being right. Like that's a human thing that we do, but it's so tough to see him like come to that realization and then just basically snap because he's having a panic attack, or like he's crashing out. and it was a really cool character moment for me to see that. Jeez. And that's like, that's when I felt myself like tensing up watching it when he chokes Dedra.
Yeah.
And is,
it was like screaming at her. I've like never seen him like that. And you're like, holy shit.
Just yes.
Playing around. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That scene was incredible. And then we see that Dedra still has to kind of go along with it. Like you can tell she's a professional. Yeah.
Dedra just said, damn, I just broke up with my boy, but I still gotta execute this man.
Yeah, we still have to murder all these people. Hold up, let me make the call. Yeah. All right, where is he?
If that ain't corporate America at its finest.
Yeah. Sorry, babe, I got a conference call at 2:30.
The Empire did not have that PTO.
No. No, and we see now we see the Gormans starting to gather, and they're starting to chant, and things are starting to get a little bit more tense. And then we see the Imperials send out these kids. Basically, they send out this police force to go and make sure that, you know, make sure everything's going okay. Like,
everything's going okay. Yeah.
And we know on a meta level that they are starting to incite a riot so that they can have the excuse.
They have an excuse to commit genocide. Yes, exactly.
So they're no good.
Oh, sorry, I cut you off. Before that too, I wanted to point out I can't remember his name, but the old guy who, you know, confronted Cyril as everybody's walking, he realizes like what's going on. You guys notice that he's trying to like get people to like get out of the square because he realizes
Caro. Yeah.
Yeah, they're all about to get massacred. And then like you brought up, sending out that young police force with that sergeant. You can even see like that sergeant's like fear in his eyes. Like he's another cog in the machine. Just, following orders. You saw, he's like, he doesn't want to go out there. And the higher ups basically like, I'm going to kill you if you don't go out there, kind of thing. So they go out there, and, you know, the higher ups, you know that sending out those, young kids is gonna, you know, cause more problems, and that's exactly what they want. And then that's literally exactly what happens. They start to, you know, get rough with the protesters. Also, the Gormans like singing like that, dude, was just something I didn't know that I like needed in Star Wars. It's kind of weird, but like all that like unity of like that people and that culture of like protesting really built the scene of like building up the stakes and what was going on. What did you guys think of all that?
Yeah, it was definitely like Les Mis, which is so funny. I mean, as soon as they started talking the way that they were, I was like, okay, this is definitely revolution, you know, yeah. And everything that's going on. But I also thought in the first season when we see the finale on Ferrix and they have the Imperial security troopers that are going out there in the all black, they do show a scene right before everything gets all crazy of them first showing up. And they don't even have like their armor on or anything. They have their duffel bags, like just going in. Like you can see, like these guys are straight from the base, bro. They just come in here and they don't even know what's going on. They just got off of basic training and that was it. But when you see these troopers and everything that's going on, they're scared. Like like these guys, like they don't know like what they are doing. And that guy says that too. Like, dude, they're useless. They're green. Like, what do you mean go out here and fight these people? Like, what are you talking about, bro? And this is what I love so much about this show is that it is showing you how evil the Empire is, you know? And I don't think Star Wars, especially the original trilogy, shows you how evil the Empire, like the people inside the Empire are evil. Even someone like Dedra, who we all were like, oh my gosh, this psychotic woman going out and just doing this. Even she is like, hey, bro, this might be too much. Are we sure that we want to do this? Yeah, bro.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me? Like, even this person has a soul and is scared and is fearing for the person that she loves because of what is about to happen. And what happens? They freaking shoot their own Imperial troopers. And then
all hell breaks loose.
Oh my God. Bro, that was like chef's kiss, man. Yeah. That was just, I don't know if you could have that better writing in other Star Wars shows. That's all I'm saying.
Exactly what they want. Yeah.
And one thing I want to point out in that sequence is Johnny mentions the Gorman singing. The person who started the song was the same person who accidentally caused Senta to die.
Yeah, he's an asshole. Yeah, but I don't like him.
But the thing I wanted to point out was he is starting to de-escalate the situation.
Yes.
It's a character growth in that he is trying to de-escalate the Gorman because he sees kind of what's happening. They bring out the troopers and the police force to basically get them to fight back so that they don't have to shoot their own person. But he de-escalates the situation and that causes the Empire to incite the riot where they shoot their own guy. And then everything goes crazy. But they learned their lesson where they took a step back and like, hey, let's calm things down. We don't need to fight right now. But that was just a little tidbit that I thought was super cool. It was the same character. Yeah. And he obviously has learned a lesson from that.
Even the Imperial Sergeant, did you guys hear right before his lone trooper got shot? He literally said for them to fall back. Yeah. And even they also realized like what was going on. And then all of a sudden, right in the back, poor kid, right in the back of the head, shot by his own man, and then all hell breaks loose. And then you notice too, like at first, the first trooper goes down. There's not like a big crowd reaction, and then the sergeant shoots that like guy hanging.
Just the guy with the flag.
Yeah, he wasn't doing anything.
What was he doing?
He gets shot, and then all hell breaks loose. And I can say it, and dude, that whole sequence of like just blaster shots going everywhere, people getting shot. It was like so much was going on. And I've never seen anything like that in Star Wars. What did you guys think?
It was
like?
It was so much murder, man. Like that's the thing though too. Is like, you know, Saul Guerrero says this in, you know, the other episode where he's like, cannon fodder. You know, like that's a lot of people think about that. Yeah, you know, stormtroopers, everything like this, but it's putting like faces behind these people and it's
putting
so much emphasis in like a single shot and a single person dying. You know, and I think that's what's so powerful is like you're starting to realize like, yo, this ish is happening all over the galaxy right now. We're 2 years before the Battle of Yavin where Luke Skywalker is about to blow up the Death Star. Like, it's getting serious. It's so serious, they about to send out all the K2 droids right now and absolutely make Star Wars look like a horror film, man.
Yeah,
like,
dude.
That's what I love, man. It's just like everything that we take for granted in other Star Wars is like someone getting cut by a lightsaber or someone getting shot by a laser. Bro, it's just the weight of it is so much heavier in this show because of that.
Yeah, it's really tangible, the violence in this, especially in the sequence, but in the show overall. I think the fact that we had a little bit of time with all of the Gorman front and they specifically zoom in on characters that we know where it's like, hey, this person that was alive is no longer.
Yeah.
And it's because of the Empire. And I think the fact that that scene goes on for so long, like it's basically, I want to say it's like at least half of the episode is the actual gunfire and the death and the killing. So
it's a murder spree, bro.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know what's also crazy? You know what's also crazy is the TIE fighter, bro. The TIE fighter is just flying by, and every single time I am terrified someone's about to get blown up, man.
Yeah.
I have never in my life been afraid of a TIE fighter. Never. Why would I be afraid of a TIE fighter?
It even felt like you were like there in the crowd and like the TIE fighter's going over, you just feel like the fear through the screen. Like that too. I was like, holy crap, something's about to go down. It was like the TIE fighter was like the subtle way of like a warning of like, oh, stuff's about to go down. And it
Dude, I'm moving. I feel like I'm playing Fortnite, and I gotta revive everybody, bro. Like I'm like, I'm hiding in a bush.
Exactly.
That's how intense I was on my couch, bro, holding my cranberry juice. I was not playing.
And going into this season, one of the things that I like to point out about Andor is like even in season one, when they're first doing their heist, we see like in the very beginning when Cassian they're like kind of just like. We see TIE fighters patrolling and one flies really low. And that's a point that always sticks out to me with this show is that they started to make the Empire feel like a real threat. And it's that TIE fighter that was way bigger than you actually see it in scale. Like that thing is actually huge. And that is just something that this show does really well and causing the Empire to be a terrifying threat. Obviously with the mass murder that we see in this episode, it is prevalent, but it is something that this show does super, super, super well.
Even the subtleties, like you just noted out with like the TIE fighter, like the Empire feels like such like a massive threat, and rightfully so, that we've never really seen in other Star Wars. Like the show's done such a good job of like showing the Empire for really what it is and how evil they actually are. And speaking of that, like with the whole massacre, like it's so like just sad. And like you said, kind of like seeing characters that you've seen in the Gorman front, like other people in the crowd just getting like shot for no reason. It was awful. And then what'd you say?
I said bodied, snap, they just thrown, bro. Like the lady getting thrown by the K2 droid.
Yeah, Enza.
And then just
the daughter of the guy from the Gorman front.
And then
dying,
just snap.
Her like crawling away, dude, was so terrifying. You could just see the droid behind her and then just throw her like 50 feet in the air.
Yeah,
like,
she clearly did not play Jedi Fallen Order. She had no idea, bro. Like, she was not ready.
Those things caused problems in Jedi Fallen Order.
So terrifying, dude.
Oh, my God.
And then, like, the stormtroopers, like, boxing everybody in. And then the snipers, too, on the top of the roof, just shooting and causing so much chaos. And, dude, the crazy thing about all this is, like, this is exactly what the Empire wants. And we see later, like, how they just spin the story. Like, oh, look at all these insurrectionists. Look at all the Empire lives that we lost. Like, dude, the propaganda is so crazy.
It was going in, dude. They were just like, bro, I've been tweeting my entire life. It's time. Like, this is these Gormans, man. F this. I knew we couldn't trust them because of those spiders. You know who I feel like sorry for the most is the bellhopper. That guy got a promotion, and now he's sitting there as a receptionist. Yeah, bro, he got
dead.
He got a promotion. He had a wife. And everything, bro. And he was talking about like, he remembered Cassian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was like in the Gorman front. Yeah.
That's when you know he's a good worker. That's why he got promoted. He knew. Like he was ready to go. And then this dude has a goddamn thermal imploder. Where did he get this from? Who gave this man an imploder inside the freaking hotel, man? Is that what they're packing? Like, it's ridiculous. And he's gone. And like, bro, no one's coming back. You know, and it's also sad too, because throughout the whole series. This season, they're talking about how many people were coming to Gorman. Like, this is a place where you would go to post on Instagram. You know, you're making a vlog here, all right? And now there's nobody there. There's nothing going on. And now this guy's dead. Like, there's the Gorman is dead.
Yeah, Gorman, that's a good point you bring up, Dagovir. Is like, I think the point of showing Gorman, like in the like what happened to it, is this is like a mid rim planet. It's not like an outer rim planet.
Yeah,
like, this is a planet that people frequent, that people know in the knew in the Republic, know in the Empire. We even see what happens to their senator. Like, this is a well known planet. Like, this is what the Empire is doing to them, and then we see the senator gets like, you know, take it away. Like, this is gonna happen to you guys at some point. And like,
yeah, this is a state away from you. That's, like, it's right there, bro.
Yeah,
they're coming to us next. You know,
like, we're the next targets. And I think that's,
they're arresting people in their own neighborhood in the Senate.
Exactly. Like, and I think that was the importance to show Gorman, is like, this isn't like a no name planet. Like, this is a well known planet in the Empire, and this is what's happening to it. So it just really shows, man. Like, the Empire just, you know, tries to do what they want, and like, nobody's calling them out for it except for a few, you know, few people. But yeah, to get back to like the end of the massacre, like just the, like at the end of that episode, like the shocks on people's faces, you know, Cassian and Wilman, you know, running away, dude, that K2 asteroid chasing them through the streets was some scary shit.
It was a murder movie. It was a horror story.
Dude,
watching that, man. And you know what's crazy too, is everything that Cassian has been through, like, he still is like crying after everything, you know, like, he still is just like, it affects him so much. And that's not something we got in Rogue One, dude. Like, at all.
That emotion, no.
You did not see that level of depth and care in him at all. It was just like, bro, he came to work and that was it. But like, when Brasso dies, you know, and he leaves B2. I can't get over that. And
nobody's talking about that, dude.
He's still there, bro. Like, I swear, Bix better go back and pick up B2. Yes. That's all I'm gonna say. I swear,
Bix will go get it.
Yeah, man. But when he's leaving and he's going back, and they have the K2S droid in the back, like, he's still like crumbling, bro. It's just like, damn, I feel bad for my boy. And then he had to let Wilman go, and he didn't know if Wilman was gonna, you know, come back and live. Yeah. Wilman's chasing all his tail and all these different planets. Go for him, bro.
Yeah, dude. As I was saying, you know, before we started, like, dude, Wilman, you know, he goes to a new planet, gets a new girl. Like, that's just what he does.
I do not want to check that man's DMs.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even, I do not want to know what is going on, bro. And remember, he was on Dakar all by himself, too. He probably got a honey there. It was really radical. You never know.
Every planet he's got a girl, I'm convinced at this point. One other thing I wanted to talk about, like, I know we just jumped a little more towards the end, but dude, when Cyril is like in the middle of a crowd, you know, panicking, like kind of just looking around, seeing everything, you know, around him fall apart, and he just sees Cassian and he just fucking loses it and runs at Cassian and starts fighting him, dude. That was such a great like fight scene, just how raw it was. And the dude, the line that got me was the name of the episode.
Jeez.
All right, we're back. So yeah, like Dagovir, like you were saying, like Cyril was, you know, kind of taking his anger out on Andor, and he kind of unintentionally doesn't realize he saves Dedra one last time.
But I think he saves Dedra. I think he saves Cassian. I think he does save Cassian. But that's what I loved, and that was, and I hated about that part, is because I love when characters redeem themselves, because I think that's a huge component in Star Wars, is atonement, you know. And when I see Cyril, I literally see the eyes of someone that literally just like, you know, what am I doing? And then as soon as I see that, he died, you know, and because I don't see Cyril as evil. I see Cyril who was just misguided and was just on the wrong path because the wrong people surrounded him, you know, and it is tragic. And I think Star Wars is the most emotional, and sometimes at its best when it's tragic like that, because yes, I hoped Cyril would have had awakened earlier. And since I saw day one, I knew this guy was going to be the best character, one of the best characters in the show. And boy, man, I don't think they missed. Like they came out swinging with his character arc, and we still have 3 more episodes left. And this dude isn't in the damn story anymore. He's gone.
I think one of the most interesting parts of his reaction to seeing Cassian is, if you think about it, for this entire time, for 3 years, Cassian has been a fixation for him. everything that has gone wrong in his life is because of Cassian.
Yeah.
And after everything has gone wrong at this point, he lost his girlfriend. He has basically lost his purpose now that he realizes everything he is doing is a lie. I think seeing Cassian and being able to do something about that is why he snaps and decides to fight him right there. And it's so interesting because he's lost the entire time during this massacre. He's like dazed and whatnot. And he sees Cassian and then he locks in. He's like, oh, there's something that I know. And I think the fight was super raw. Like it was,
Hell,
there was so much emotion in there. And the fact where he gets the upper hand on Cassian basically and starts pointing at the gun. And then he says, who are you? That is like the biggest slap in the face that I think he could have had at that point in time. Like
now, that, this. Like,
yes. Like he probably thought about Cassian all day, every day,
bro. Time. Even when he was with Dedra, she told him, turn out the lights, bro. He was thinking about Cassian, dude. Because you're right, Connor. Because at the end of the day, he doesn't know who Cassian is. He probably thinks Cassian is a terrorist. He probably thinks Cassian is a murderer. And I guess, you know, in his eyes, the Empire was what Cassian or what Cyril thought, you know, they could get rid of Cassian. People like Cassian. You know, who is Cassian? This is a rebellion. But, like, I guess from Cyril's point of view, maybe he realized that the Empire was this really shitty evil organization, but he probably also thought Cassian was a terrorist, you know? So I think I understand that and frustration and everything, but damn it, man. Damn, I gotta watch this shit again.
Yeah. And you see,
I rewatched
when he says, sorry, Johnny, you see when he says that line, there's this moment that goes off in Cyril's head and he starts to lower his gun. Just slightly. You see that there's this moment.
He was done.
There's this moment and he was going to let it go and be like, what am I doing? But his actions came back to bite.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. With the Gormans. Yep.
Especially that one, the lead one. It's just wrong place, wrong time, bro. Like, it's just, God damn it.
Cyril was probably my favorite character. Like, in the whole season two and seeing that, and it's going to be weird without him in the last three, but like, what do you guys think of them? Like killing him off. You think it was like necessary? I've been trying to wonder.
Well, the show, in my opinion, outside of it not having, you know, lightsabers and force, yada, 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 whatever. I do think the second weakest part of the show is the time constraint. Like you, instead of going five seasons, you now have only 12 episodes to convince the entire Star Wars fandom and people that don't watch Star Wars that this is worth their time and money to watch. And that's going to be extremely hard to do when every single break that you're giving us with these three episodes is a whole year after. There are still story points you do not know. There are still questions that you're going to have. This show is still amazing. It is amazing. But I'm just visualizing, like, bro, like, we could have spent a whole season on Gorman. We could have spent a whole season on Yavin. You know, that's three seasons, four seasons, you know? And I don't know what the hell's going to happen next because we're still 2 years away from the Battle of Yavin, you know? So do I think that it's going to be a weaker show without him? Yes. But I still think Andor is very, very high on that power scale of TV shows for Star Wars. So I think they'll be fine.
Yeah. And I think it's something that, like we said from the beginning, it's tough to, like, it's understandable that Diego Luna doesn't want to spend the rest of his life doing this character, but it would have been just beautiful to get this slow burn where we get even more details and things to do within a storyline. Do we want to start moving on to, like, the aftermath of what the hell just happened?
I kind of talked about it a little, but, you know, then we get, you know, the aftermath of Coruscant, you know, Mon Mothma. You guys want to dive into that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll just give like a layout. We see everybody start to realize what has happened in the aftermath of the massacre. And the Senate is basically on lockdown, where nobody is going to really be able to get on the floor. Like, all of the just Imperial bootlickers are just going to say they're
Yeah, that's a good way to
nonsensical.
put them.
They're nonsensical propaganda, where they flip it and they say, "Hey, these Gormans, obviously we all saw it coming. We knew all the reports that were planted by these people." All like that, the entire like machine came to a point, a pinnacle in that, and the Senate is able to just kind of like shut it all down. So what did you guys think of like how the Imperials spun everything with their propaganda and their lies just in the aftermath?
I mean, I kind of talked about it earlier, but yeah, like they were able to just from the start, we saw in the first two episode or two, like they were, the ones that creating the narrative. Like this is what they wanted. They wanted to, show the Gormans in a negative light so they could, get away with this, genocide and take what they want from the planet. And we even see like in the news broadcast, like I talked to you, like how they were spinning that was just so incorrect to what actually happened. It was just crazy how there's even like parallels to that you like see in real life with like TV and news and like misinformation. And there's a lot of parallels to that I saw to like the real world. And that's something Star Wars has always kind of referenced when it was back with George Lucas with like the Vietnam War and all that. And even and now today we're seeing with just everything going on. I thought that was really, really eye-opening to just show like just the Empire can just, trying to get away and do what they want. And then like you mentioned with this with the senators, like they're just spewing nonsense. Like it's like the emperor, like, hey, you love the Empire. Yeah, go speak, kind of thing. What did you guys think of all that?
I don't even think it's the emperor. I think it's just people, like just trying to hold their place in power. And that's
Or
what that
even
freaking
fear,
message.
you could say, like their fear, like, oh, I'm not gonna say anything bad about the Empire. I'm just gonna, ride because I know what could happen.
And that's what I love about this episode, because it's like, dude, we just saw the Gorman massacre, and I didn't think that the next episode was going to be any better than that. Because I just like, all right, you just showed me all this. How is it going to be good? But it's just as good. Because now you're starting to see like the Imperial war machine and propaganda just
Yeah.
start moving.
You're
It is
spewing.
running. And I'm so glad. Like, I'm so glad that we finally get to see like what the Empire is doing to their own people. And it's just showing them, deceiving them and everything, every part of it. Because, by the time of episode 4, the Senate is no longer there. It's dismantled. It's gone. That's what Tarkin says as soon as he walks into that room with everybody and Vader. So it's really crazy to see what's going to happen in this with Mothma, the Oath Keeper, everyone just kind of bottling down all this propaganda. Like, yeah, I know, right? Wow, crazy. Anyway, happy Empire Day. Yeah, baby. Yeah. So yeah, really crazy to see that. But yeah, we'll talk about everything else that goes on, because I definitely want to talk about the ISB and them doing ISB things.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, and like at that point you see Mon Mothma is like basically like she snaps. She's like, this is it. Like, I have to say
yeah, it's a
something.
wrap.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then we get
Well.
yeah, we get a conversation with my goat Bail Organa, where he is like, hey, like if you're gonna do it, like this is the time to do it. I can't go with you because I have to kind of hold things down here, but like do it, go to Yavin, and then we'll be locked in. And I think that was really cool to see. I think Benjamin Bratt does like a really, really good job as Bail Organa in here.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
like
I
it.
cannot lie. I was sorry, Sheev. I was hating. I was a hater,
You were hating?
because
I was
well,
also with
I
you,
wasn't.
but I like it. I like it.
Yeah. Okay,
I
I'm
gotta
glad I
admit to you, I
wasn't
was kind of
alone.
being a hater because Jimmy Smith's dude is like so iconic as Bail Organa, and I was like, oh God, they're gonna
Yeah.
replace him. But like, he
Right,
really
he's
did a
a.
good job, and it's not like they wanted to replace him. It was a whole scheduling thing,
Right.
and I'm glad they didn't do
Exactly.
like some creepy CGI of the actor. Like,
Yeah,
the
yeah,
guy
yeah.
kind of feels like Bale, so I think it works.
Yes, yeah. Like, bro, I'm not gonna lie. Like, when I saw the new Matrix and, you know, Agent Smith was not Agent Smith, I was like, what the hell are we doing? You know, like, what are we doing? Come on now. It's the same thing. Like, bro, this guy has literally been in Star Wars since the prequels. The same time as, like, Mon Mothma's actress. Like, why are we doing this? And then you find out it's because of scheduling. And that's just tragedy. That's just tragic, bro. Like, this guy was just in Kenobi. Like, this guy is literally the face of Bail Organa. But I cannot lie, man. This guy's got class. He's a fan. You know, he did it so well. And then his arc, my God, like, this is probably Bail Organa's most important arc since Order 66 and him going up to the Jedi Temple with Yoda. Like, hello? And what he's saying, he's like, yeah, Mothma, I gotta be here. All right. This is all what it's about. And I just instantly saw this man blow up in flames on Alderaan after I said that, after I saw that. And I was just like, it's all part of the plan. He's not just back on some side character that blows up. I mean, he does. But, you know, it's just so sad. When I just feel like my boy Bail always wanted to be a Jedi, and he's doing Jedi things in his own way. And I was just like, man, like, that guy picked one hell of a time to be recast. And damn it, man. You know, I feel bad for my original actor, but still, this guy was great, great, great arc. Chef's kiss, baby.
Tear this place to shit is the line.
Dude, yeah. And what's crazy, bro? God, he's literally sitting like this, like he just lost like the NBA Finals or something or the Super Bowl when Mothma leaves, and my boy knows like the part that he played. He's just like, yeah, it's done. I'm here. You know, right after the craziest speech, bro.
Dude, we
Mothma
gotta
was
talk about this
spitting,
speech.
bro.
One of the best speeches I've ever heard in Star Wars. We gotta talk
So
about
good.
that.
Yeah, let's talk.
We're
Let's talk
jumping a
about the
little bit, but we
speech.
gotta talk.
Let's talk about the speech. The
Yeah,
line.
there's a lot to talk about on this podcast, guys. This was
Yeah.
we're not even done with the series yet.
Yeah.
So
And the she says, I have this quote up right here. She says, "I believe we are in crisis. The death of truth is the ultimate victory of evil."
Yes, dude,
Yes.
that was so powerful.
Yes.
And
Do you have what she says about Palpatine? The monster will come for us all, but the
yeah.
monster is Palpatine.
Dude, he
Spinning,
dropped
bro.
that bar,
Spinning,
and then
bro.
it cut
So
out.
good, bro.
Like, right as he cuts that
I
out, that's the
wish.
last line. Like,
What
yes,
happened
bro,
yesterday?
I wish Palpatine was there. Like, if there was one Easter egg, please, guys, just let me see
Or
Mothma
like cut
say
to
that
him
to the
watching
face.
that. Like just a little
God.
like subtlety of like him
Dude.
seeing that speech live, like oh, but still,
Bro,
so good.
I did not give a damn about Mothma. Like just this character. Oh, she shows up in Return of the Jedi and the Bothans. Woohoo, Mothma,
And the
yeah, you know.
Bothans died.
But like after Andor, especially season two, I was like,
She's a
damn, lady,
great character.
bro,
Yeah.
I'm gonna buy your Funko Pop, man. Like that's how
I
I
just
feel,
saw
you
her
know.
Funko Pop and I was looking
Dude,
for her, like,
hey,
dude, she's like,
bro,
what?
if you give me a shirt like this, bro, I'm buying Mothma's right now, okay? All right. That's
We're Mon
how I
Mothma
feel.
stands in this house, in this
Yeah,
podcast.
well,
We
dude, I was
stand
like,
Mon
man.
Mothma.
Like,
She
I
would have
did
fit
not
right in
care.
at the Met Gala too. She's popping off with all
Yeah,
of
bro,
her
that's what I'm
costume.
saying. Yeah.
It's so drippy. And
Yeah.
She
the
was
line, the
wonderful.
quote that you were talking about, Dagobert, "What happened yesterday in Gorman was unprovoked genocide, and the monster screaming the loudest, the monster we've helped create, the monster that will come for us all soon enough is Emperor Palpatine." Like she all she
That
about to
is
pull out a
spinning.
mic and dropped it. At that point,
Dude.
there's nothing else more to say. And you can see the Imperials. We see that Imperial that had been monitoring the like the tapped mics
Yes.
of like the all the different senators who are everybody knows are part of the rebellion at this point, basically. But you see the guy just like, cut off the power. I don't care if it shuts the whole Senate down.
He
Get her
is
off the
freaking
air.
out.
Yeah, they're
Yes.
freaking. They're afraid of literally
Dude.
the truth.
And
That's what he just
I
said.
love the way that they got to Mon Mothma speaking is through rules that were implemented by Palpatine and by the Senate.
Yeah.
Bail Organa's like, based off of this thing that you guys said, we can do this, 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 and this Mon Mothma go. And nobody can say anything.
Yeah, and
And she
also,
cooks.
yeah, oh, she
Yeah.
cooks for sure. And then it's interesting too that Bail like gives her the floor. I was wondering if they're like suspicious of him, of like, yeah, you just turned the floor to this girl, this chick, and she just like roasted our glorious emperor. What's going on, man?
I'm sure they all know. I'm sure the Emperor knows about like
Yeah.
all these players.
They had bad wires. But they couldn't take them out yet because Bail and Mothma have consistently been in interrogations with the ISP already. It's just a matter of time. And, you know, they already have so many devices. You see her like trying to figure out like, well, you know, how much is tapped in here. So like she has survived, you know, she has survived this freaking long, bro. And then with all this stuff going on where they're trying to take her out and when she leaves, we finally see like a real ISP agent like in Star Wars. And bro, like, I don't know if you guys have ever played Star Wars or Republic MMO, but Jesus, man, the Sith Imperial agents are so damn hard to take out in PvP, bro. These guys are going around running, and you know they're killing Jedis and stuff. They're turning invisible. I hated fighting them in PvP. I was a Sith Inquisitor. Your boy was doing work, most damage in the game. I know, I'm sweat. But those Imperial agents were so hard. And I got to say, I was not impressed by this Imperial agent and how she handled this. And she just got completely bodied and dropped right there.
She's kind of dumb.
I wish that we had seen her do even more stuff because, you know, she did kill the one guy. I was like, okay, all right, we'll see the Imperial agents doing their thing. But I really wanted to see, like, the Cassian version of what the Empire had. And we didn't really see that to a full effect. But we got something, and that was cool as hell.
Yeah, I think it's another constraint of the show being, like,
yes,
short. It's one season, or it's this arc is like there's two seasons of this show. I think if we had more time, because we see Luthen somehow knows that his team has been infiltrated, and like that's something that when I heard that immediately, as a viewer, you're like, hold on a second, like,
yeah.
Like, is he telling the truth? Like, he could just be saying that. But if this
he does have Lonnie in there, so maybe Lonnie knows. Lonnie
exactly. Knows I think that's what happened, where Lonnie, somebody reports to Lonnie, and Lonnie lets Luthen know.
And then he couldn't say anything, because if then something is said, then they'll know that there's a mole in the ISP.
Only this guy was in this room, so all you guys
exactly.
are dying.
So that's why he's like, come on, like, you can't say anything. And it was like that in the previous episodes and seasons, you know, back in season one with Saw, like, hey, like we have this source, we can't burn it. So that's immediately what I was thinking when he said that to Mon about knowing about the mole on Bail Organa's team. But yeah, then, you know, Mon, you know, gets escorted out by Cassian, and then you kind of really see like Mon's kind of been like, I mean, she's been like funding the rebellion, but now she's like the episode title, Welcome to the Rebellion, you know, she's seeing like some of the, you know, the horrors, and, you know, her reactions and stuff were just like so powerful, because like I just said, she's been like funding the rebellion. She's been like the voice speaking out. She hasn't like gotten like her hands, I don't want to say dirty yet, but you know, like she hasn't seen like the horrors of fighting the rebellion yet. And then she's seeing as she's getting escorted, like people getting shot. Her driver dude just gets murked by Cassian.
Deserved.
It's just really shocking her, and like she has to like quickly adapt to like, okay, I'm a rebel now. Like, this is it. Like, I gotta go and get out of here.
Did you not know what you were investing into?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
it's like she bought a crypto and then it started tanking and then didn't realize that's why it was tanking.
Man, yeah. I love the way how Cassian handled that driver. He was like, "What's his name?" And he's like, "Yeah, take her, pop out." Damn, buddy, let's go. And he takes that speeder in the classiest way and just dips out of course. Bro, if I was a stormtrooper and I saw that speeder flying like that away, I would have shot that damn thing. Like, somebody's in there, guys, you know?
Stop that,
like,
man.
Yeah, right, exactly. I want to talk about, go back a little bit, where we see Cassian meet up with Luthen. Like that conversation that they have where he says to Luthen, he says, I'm done. Like, I'm done after this. Like, this is the last thing that I'm doing. And it's almost a callback to the Force Healer conversation where Luthen talks about, hey, like, are you sure you're done? You've come through for me every single time when I didn't know if you would. That seems like you're for the cause. And he says that he has to make his own decisions. And one thing that Clea says, it's Clea, right?
Clea. It's like Leia, but it's a play on the word. Yeah.
One of the things that Clea says, Cassian first tells her, he's like, I'm done. And she's with the things that he puts to is like, he's like, I need to make my own decisions. And he's like, she says, isn't that what we're fighting for? And that kind of stuck in his head. And also Mon Mothma's speech, you can tell when Cassian's listening to Mon Mothma's speech right outside her door that it's hitting. It is hitting all of the necessary check marks. And then he's locked in, which I think is, I mean, it's so cool to see him. It's so cool to see. These are our two main characters, right? Mon Mothma and Cassian Andor. This is the first time they're meeting. It was cool to see
two sides of the rebellion
because they're fighting two different wars. Yeah. They're like Johnny said, like she doesn't know like what it's like to be in a battleground. Like she's boots on the ground now. And Cassian, I think, does a really good job of helping her transition into that.
Yeah. It's almost like she's the owner and he's the quarterback. You know, like, she just had no, I mean, she obviously knows that she owns the team. She's funding the team, but she doesn't know like what, like the general on the field, the quarterback is doing like every day, the stuff that he's got to do to get his hands dirty, you know? So yeah, that's just sick dynamic, man. I just, I can't wait to see these next three episodes, boys.
Dude.
Like, I cannot wait, fam. I cannot wait. I kind of, I don't know what's going to happen next, but I cannot
watch them together and see.
Like,
maybe go live or something. We'll figure it out. But dude, these last three episodes are going to be insane. Oh goodness. I can't.
And then we get a Gold Squadron reference as well.
Yeah. I was going to say,
the end of this episode. Yes.
Yeah. We get to see that interconnection with Rebels, which I thought was really cool. And I'm kind of glad they didn't like, what did Cassian say? It was kind of like about, it was, they talked about like her next speech and like, you know, maybe going with her or something. And then,
I guess that was the Rebels one. I guess where there's where she's telling everybody, you know, like, hey, this is the rebellion. Look at our fleet and everything else. Empire scrubs hate them, you know?
Yeah. The thing that I think they're trying to do is tell a story where, hey, our Gold Squadron saved Mon Mothma. Like she's like, she's going to get escorted by Gold Squadron. Like They want to tell us. I think there's a line, like a throwaway line in there that's like, oh, they want to tell their story or like change.
Yeah,
their
that's
story.
What it was. It was like,
and, tell yes.
story. And it like hinted like, oh, we've seen this story in Rebels. Like, oh, we don't need to see it again in Andor. But
correct.
Like, next to two shows. Yeah. And I thought that was really nice.
But it's almost, it's rebellion propaganda now.
Yes,
it's,
exactly. They have their own kind of
propaganda. It's the rebellion propaganda trying to tell this story to unite the rest of the cells. So I think that was a really smooth transition that we got from like a Rebels to this show, because honestly, I get frustrated a lot of times with the way that these TV shows have overwritten some canon, whether it's through like a comic or whether it's a book, things like that, where I've gotten a little bit frustrated with that. Not that it's the end of the world, because like we know, obviously being lore heads, that like we know those stories and that could frustrate us a little bit, but I love how they seamlessly wove that in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still not as frustrating or hurt as Bix leaving us.
Dude, that's the next thing, dude. Oh my God.
I'd like, bro, I just can't.
Face,
dude, I'm
bombing right now, dude.
Bro, I. Yeah, bro. Like, if I was Cassian, bro, like,
dude, everybody's like, leaving him, bro. But like, it's kind of like necessary for his character, because like now he's like fully committed to the rebellion. And dude, in her message when she was telling him, like, you know, when this is all over, like, and like, come, you know, I'll come back. And oh my God, and then we know what happens to him. Ah, oh!
You know how upset I was when I saw that. I was like, damn, bro. Like, you fell for Jyn or so after this, like. But not like Jyn is bad. All right? Don't get me wrong. All right, you know, everybody's a 10 that we're talking about, okay? I'm just saying, like Bix, I just
such a good character.
If I would have woke up to that message after I literally said, like, I'm done.
Yeah, it's done. Like, I'm done, let's go, what, let's go away.
What's so hard and difficult to swallow is Bix is like, nah, son, you in this for life. Like, they need you.
Yeah.
Like, they need you. And I think that's what hurts the most. It's like, Cassian knows it too. It's just like, sorry, bro. You cannot have this in your life. You have to do this.
You have to be like, committed
to this.
Like, I'm holding
you
back.
All that, you spent all that time with your honey in that Coruscant safe house, bro. You should have got it more. All I'm saying is that that's it. That's all you got. Now you got
to
go out and
now
do
it's
the
time to fight.
Rebellion.
Yeah. And she says the line she says is, "I'm choosing for both of us." I think
I know.
She says, "I'm choosing for both of us." So that is what hurts the most, and he knows that she's right. And it's if you would have crashed out right there, that would have been the most valid.
That was a valid crash out opportunity. Yeah,
like
he didn't crash out. Totally, he kind of like stood in the middle of the runway, but he didn't crash out.
Yeah.
Yeah, my chest's hurting because I can't rise. Like I can't, dude. I can't go. I don't know if I can rewatch that episode, man. Just because
that like, really hit hard.
If I rewatch it, I'm not watching that part. I don't want to watch that part.
Skip.
Yeah. Dude, and then they live happily ever after.
It'll turn into Revenge of the Sith, where it's like, Anakin won't turn to the dark side. Oh, Big says no.
Oh man,
Biggs will not leave.
Well, that's even worse. It's like Padme knows Anakin is turning, and then she leaves him because she feels like he can't be healthy with her in his life. You know, like I'm just like, oh man, oh yeah, that hurts, dude.
Yeah, yeah. And that's
How dare they?
It hurts. It's tough. And then we get K. Then we get K2.
Yeah, at least we got K2 in this. So like. He loses his husband, but he gets his best friend in K2.
Yeah.
And that was cool to kind of see him. To kind of see him like resurrected like Frankenstein. And they got the same voice actor from Rogue One. And I loved how funny it was when Cassian's like pointing a gun at him. And he's like, "Did I do something wrong?" Or something like that, he said. Like,
yeah, he's more nice right now. He's not a complete
a-hole.
He's
not as sassy. Like, yeah.
He gets trained to probably be an a-hole after things like that, getting guns ported at him. Yeah.
Imagine your first conscious memory is just like having a gun pointed at you.
Yeah.
Waking up in life and it's just like, hey.
Yeah.
There you go.
That was a cool moment at the end to get K2, because I love K2 in Rogue One. It's such a funny character.
He's a great character, man. Yeah. He's so good. Very very fun character to watch. It's about time they brought him back. They brought him back in such a natural way. Like, it wasn't forced. It wasn't like, all right, season 2, episode 1. You missed K2, I still here you go. No, it was really good. Like, great purpose, you know? Yeah.
I think that might be what I'm looking forward to most next arc, is seeing that interaction between him and Cassian.
Yeah, I kind of see that, you know, friendship to start to come together. And also, one other thing in this episode that I thought was a nice little callback was we got to see Melchi again. Like a little
Melchi.
Yes!
I love Melchi, dude. I had to bring him up.
Yes.
To my boy Melchi.
Oh, you know what was also cool? I don't know if you had seen, but right at the beginning, where she's looking at all the blasters.
Yes.
I think Jyn Erso's weapon is there. Right?
Was that?
Oh, really?
I couldn't tell if it was Jyn.
It was a reference.
Okay.
Yeah. Because remember, she gets it from Cassian.
Yes.
That's the one that she takes, and I swear to God, that first one.
It would be Melchi's at this point, because
I could be completely wrong, by the way, but I swear to God.
No, I think I saw something like that. Yeah. There is some kind of importance to that blaster. I think you're right there. Yeah.
I think Melchi's becoming. He's like leveling up in the Glub Shadows. He is.
Yes.
He's having like his moment now. Yeah.
He's got more time than Ben Quaggenero. So
yeah, for real.
dude.
But yeah, no, I think I'm curious to see where this goes. I honestly don't have an idea at this point. Like
because we've kind of seen the conclusion of, you know, Gorman probably, and we got another time jump. The only thing I can think of that we're going to see in the next episode is probably more Krennic, and more of the now mining is being done probably on Gorman, and like the Death Star coming together, and maybe more whispers of the Death Star. Because isn't this supposed to lead into, you know, Rogue One?
Yeah.
That's probably what we're going to get next episode. Dagger, what do you think we're going to – any predictions and any theories on what we might see next?
Pain and suffering.
That sums it up.
Pain and suffering. There's nothing else, bro. Pain and suffering. Like, you already took my heart. You already took my droid. Like, what else did it take for me, you know? Like, who else is alive right now that's not Rogue One?
I think Luthen's screwed.
Oh, Luthen. Yeah, Luthen.
I think he's super dead. I thought he was going to die low-key after, you know, he had that conversation with Cassian, like, before the mission. I thought that's when it was going to happen. But it's probably going to happen next episode, because he's not in, you know, Rogue One or the original trilogy or anything like that. So
honestly, like, like just thinking about up to this point right now, if this season ended right here, I think it would be like this is this feels like a like an ending. This episode
yeah,
nine
yeah,
felt
it,
like
it does.
Yeah.
Because the way Vix like left out and, yeah. and Mothma and the in Yavin, yes, I think so. Yavin, yeah. But I don't want it to be the end because I still feel like as good as this series was, I still feel like there was so much slowness in the first season and the beginning of this season. So I still need these other three episodes
more
to be just, I need that. I need it to equal each other for me, at least just me.
A little more action packed probably is these last three arcs. Cause I mean, eight and nine were full of stuff. So I can just imagine. 10
this is a finale time. Boys. Yeah. You know, are we going to see a finale? You know, so I want to know. You know, so let's go, dude. I'm not trying to rhyme. I don't know why it's happening.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think hopefully we get like Amanda up season two finale vibes from this.
Yeah. Oh my God. I was just talking to Johnny about like, cause all right, you know, there's a lot of people using the big capital B word for this show, the best Star Wars project ever, the best. And so I will say that I don't think that's true. I think it is one of the best, absolutely. But like, I don't think it's better than Empire. I don't think it's better than Revenge of the Sith. You know, I don't think it is also, I don't think it's better than the first two seasons of Mando. And because there is nothing that has gripped the entire world as much as Mando and Baby Yoda. Like, there was just a whole cultural phenomenon with those things. Andor is amazing. Don't get it twisted. It is one of the best Star Wars projects. But I still think it's missing just a few things to push it as, like, the best of all time. Like, in number one Star Wars.
These last three episodes might change your mind.
And it can be. It could be so close. Yeah. But I when I walked out with my Mandalorian shirt, when everybody was watching that show, everybody was saying, this is the way. That hasn't happened to me with Andor. You know?
Yeah.
And so that is the only reason why I am saying it's not the best yet. That's it. But this show is so damn good. Like, it's so good. And I understand why people can't watch it because it is slow. It's dialogue heavy. It's just
such a different kind of Star Wars.
Yes, man. And like, I just
love it for that reason.
Yeah. You know, Johnny and I were talking before you came in here, but like, you're telling me, Disney, that you were capable of this the whole time? Like, you're telling me, like, you were capable of this the whole time? You know, and I love a lot of the stuff you do. I love Ahsoka. A lot of people don't love that show, but all I'm saying is, like, why are you giving me this now and it's only going to be one season? You know, two seasons. Yeah. You know, I need to know, like, you lock Tony Gilroy up in a closet, you feed his family, and you pay that man whatever he wants.
Give this man a blank check, please.
Like, I where was this with the Acolyte? Where was this with Kenobi? You know, where was this with Boba Fett?
Yeah.
I like these shows. I like these shows. I'm just saying, like, this is a high, you know, like...
Those shows are good. Those shows are good.
Yes.
This show is great.
Yes, bro. It's a different caliber, man. It's what water were you sipping on, man? Yeah.
Like, this is taking another complete level to their.
It's the volume. The volume ruins everything.
Damn. The
volume gave us this TikTok brain.
All my homies hate the volume. Yeah. But even still, because don't get me wrong, there's a lot of Dave Filoni hate that I can't stand. Like, I don't know where this Dave Filoni hate has come from and everything. I get people don't like, you know, certain arcs of the Clone Wars, or, you know, people don't like when characters show up in Star Wars. Makes no sense to me. But I will say that, yes, there's a component here with this writing that we are missing in every Star Wars project, man. And the level of thought, the level of care. It's like, you were telling me you were capable of this the entire time, bro? Come on, man.
Yeah, I will say, I agree with you there on Filoni. I will say, I've been a little critical of Filoni. I love him from the Clone Wars, and I mean, he literally made my childhood, and I've loved some of the live action projects he's done. I just feel like sometimes he relies too much on fan service rather than telling like a complex story. Like, I just felt a little bit like that with Ahsoka and some of the other shows he's done. And then I see, like, Andor, like, we're seeing here all these complex characters and storytelling. And I just want more of this with some of his projects. That's all I really want. Like, no.
That may have to be, like, a whole podcast topic. honestly, Connor, is just like talking about like that specifically, because I think we could talk over another hour and a half here about yeah, that and everything else, because I also have certain takes that I think that are definitely not consistent with everybody else about these things. And I just think there is a certain elitism when it comes to this project that we're talking about. And because people want more of it, they start to hate other projects and other people that are affiliated with those projects.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the way of winning, is acting that way or doing these things. But support Andor, man. Support Andor and everything that's going into this, man, because I don't know when you're going to get it next time.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Any last thoughts from you guys?
I miss B2. I'm sad. I miss B2. I'm sad for Bix, bro. And I'm sad for Cyril, but I'm ready to go another week.
I'm sad for us. Yeah. I'm sad for us.
Dude, we got 1 week of this left. Well, of Andor left. But then we gotta keep going. I'm also sad for Gorman. Like, I really kind of fell off the planet, and it was crazy how in a couple episodes they got me to like care about those people in that planet and just see it like destroyed in like half an episode. And I'm excited to, you know, see the ending, but also, like you said, Connor, sad because I want more. It's only 2 seasons. Please give me more. Please. Oh, God. I want more.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. You think I'm crazy?
Yes.
I am.
I am crazy.
I think we saw in the last episode. I think we might see a little more.
Solid. I need it all, baby.
Yeah. I need more of him huffing that Rhydonium.
Yeah. For real. But I think, geez, there's, I mean, we could talk about this for another 2 hours.
We could keep going on this. We could talk about Tales of the Underworld. Like, we could keep going.
But that's all right. We got a lot of stuff.
We
to
got
talk
a
about
lot of time
when Andor ends. So
we talk about it then. Yeah.
So. Yeah. If you've made it this far, I'd like to thank you so much for listening to us, to the Starlight Podcast.
It.
We hope you guys enjoy the finale. I know I'm sure most of us will. And may the force be with you guys. And thank you so much.